The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks being a restricted free agent means being at the dog park, but on a leash. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. I am so happy to be back from vacation, first of all, and joined on this delightful Wednesday by my friend from NFL Network, Patrick Claibon. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be here in this moment where you come back from vacation. So like go through the card catalog, find the least professional person that you can to have on your show and ease your way back into work.
But part of the reason why I wanted you on this week is it's insane.
Yeah.
Like we are in the middle of free agency. Taping at any moment is like trying to catch a falling knife. Crazy news could break while we're taping, the second we're done taping, which would be worse, actually. But we did sort of catch the knife, which actually feels like a pretty apt metaphor for what I'm about to say, which is that we are recording this after Aaron Rodgers announced on the Pat McAfee show today that he intends to become a New York Jet, the worst kept secret in the NFL for like 2 months now. We did briefly, Patrick and I did briefly discuss the idea of just not addressing it as a bit, but I am committed to you, my listeners, and I wouldn't do that.
I did everything I could, guys. I tried. I thought it would have been funny, but the knife has been falling like in, and then going back up and falling again. And we've been grasping at like the after image of a knife. The insiders are, because like it seems like a requirement that every single show has to start with Aaron Rodgers, and every single hour has to start with Aaron Rodgers. And the insiders were on the verge of revolting and just deciding to not be at the top of the show. It's like, hey guys, what can you tell us about Aaron Rodgers? And it became like this opening running joke. And then I just decided, you know, I was on the elliptical. I'll let the timeline tell me what's happening on this particular podcast. And it worked out. Didn't have to spend a lot of time on it.
I actually thought it was possible he might not confirm anything today because it's Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, him saying he intends to be a Jet is not the same thing as a deal being done, obviously. But it does give us something to talk about. I'm not really interested in breaking down the various points he made about the Packers and whatnot. I am interested in this from a football perspective. So just quickly, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some of the other big news of the day. And then I sent you a bunch of teams that have been very active in free agency that I think are very interesting. And then we'll see how much time we have. If there's any time left, we can do like a rapid fire of some of the biggest signings. There's so much to talk about. But we do have to start with Rodgers. So TLDR version, he said he wants to be a Jet. I guess that you got to back it up even further because, you know, over the course of the week, there had been reports about mounting interest, momentum. Diana Russini sent out a wish list of players he wanted the Jets to sign that Aaron Rodgers refuted, or he notoriously, careful with his words. Aaron Rodgers said he never made a list of demands, which is not the same thing as a wish list. One of those players was signed by the Jets, Alan Lazard, seemingly confirming that there's at least been discussions about it. Although I did see some insiders say the Jets would have signed him anyways, just like they would have brought on Nate Hackett.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Nate Hackett was so hot coming into the offseason. You just had to get a piece of it.
I mean, look, it worked. I guess let's start here. As a Jets fan today, and put yourself in that scary mindset, how are you feeling?
I'm relieved that we've gotten to this point where it feels like it's absurd to say that we're relieved that somebody has made a decision regarding what they want. Like, there's still some work to be done here as far as, and this whole process has been a negotiation. Like, accuse me of being cynical, but this whole thing has been a negotiation from the time that the Packers were considering what to offer Devontae 3 years ago. This has all been a negotiation and a management of the relative power that the sides have had. And we've gotten to this point, and Aaron has decided that this is the best move for him to get what he wants. And so he's waited till today to say that he wants to play for the New York Jets and tells everybody that it was Friday. And now he's put the Packers and the Jets in this other position. It's all a negotiation to me. If I'm a Jets fan, I am happy that the negotiations have moved to this point and we're not where we were 2 weeks ago. But also, I don't care. Like, Aaron's weird. So am I. Like, a lot of people are weird. Like, he can throw the football. He can throw the football well, and he's done it. We're going to be coming up on 2 decades of him doing it very well at a very high level. And so, yeah, all the other stuff, all of the post headlines and the corny stuff that we're going to go through, that's all the price to pay to have a really good football player. So I'm happy. I am pleased that we're at this point. I wish we were at the other point that we will be eventually, but I'm pleased at this point.
Yeah, from a purely football standpoint, as a Jets fan, outside of, I would argue, acquiring Lamar Jackson, this is the best case scenario. You go from a combination of Zach Wilson, Joe Flacco, and Mike White to Aaron freaking Rodgers, who is coming off of a down season. There's a lot, and I think this is going to be something we'll probably break down a lot in the coming weeks. He was injured during this down season, but showed some signs of aging as well. All of that said, even 50% of Aaron Rodgers is better than what you've had. So, again, I do think that there's a lot of work to be done with New York, particularly concerned about that offensive line, the tackle position. But, you know, I guess we should acknowledge here, I actually think Alan Lazard fits in nicely. You know, he basically takes the place of Corey Davis, who I imagine is going to be cut from a pretty crowded wide receiver room. But as a number two behind Garrett Wilson, we'll see what happens also with Elijah Moore and if he gets replaced by Randall Cobb. That would not be smart. You know, it's a good the offense. The potential for the offense is great, certainly great, better than last year. I think, though, your point about leverage is what fascinates me the most about this, because what's become abundantly clear is the Jets had the least leverage of everybody in this whole situation, especially as quarterbacks were, like, falling off the board and, you know, the draft trades were happening and guys were being signed and traded and all of that. The Jets had no other options. They had completely run out of options. And so that meant two parties had leverage over them, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Rodgers' leverage is now pretty much gone because he is committed to becoming a New York Jet. I mean, you know, I guess he could always back out, but or he could retire as he...
He could go back into the darkness affirming. And have the darkness augment his decision-making yet again, because he went from 90-10 to, I don't know. That's what the tweet said.
90% retire. He was thinking about retiring. So Rodgers' leverage manifests itself in the not demand list or whatever. But now all of the leverage lies, I think, with the Green Bay Packers. And that's the next phase of all of this. And it gets really interesting because the Packers have made it very, very obvious they are donezo. This was like the number one thing you heard at the Combine a couple weeks ago, is people being like, yo, the Packers are like, how that they are ready for the Jordan Love era to begin. So then, Patrick, for the Packers, the question becomes, okay, like, what do you want? You know, what does it mean to, like, do right by a franchise legend? I would argue they already did right by him when they gave him $1 zillion a couple years ago. How far are they willing to take this in terms of getting something back for him? I don't know, but I think it's going to be very interesting.
And Tom Pelissero was reporting earlier this week that they haven't actually figured out a framework. I would hope that there have at least been some discussions, right, with regards to what percentage you're paying and what the round pick looks like and how those things, hopefully they've at least had those kind of discussions, because, like, if we're starting at zero right now, like today on March 15th, that would seem like a kind of failure on both parts to at least entertain that. I do know, like, it's going to be north of $70 million over the next couple of years.
Yeah.
And so that, Is that the ultimate price? Or are we just saying, oh yeah, let's do a conditional fifth, and you guys don't have to pay them? Like, hopefully they have something.
That's a great, even with a post June 1st cut, this is still a mammoth dead cap hit for Green Bay, right? And they're not eating any salary, like, so. But even so, they are they've taken on so much. In addition to the emotional labor of the last couple of years, I imagine people in the building would argue. So I do think, and by the way, they're in no hurry here. They have a quarterback who they plan on, by all accounts, rolling with next season.
Oh God, I hope so.
The Jets are the desperate party here. So at minimum, I feel like they're going to get a first back. I would be surprised if not, because they have them right where they want them. And Rodgers helped today.
I think that the headline on the, I guess if we made this like a message board trade offer, they should take a WFAN tweet that I saw 2 days ago. It was a thank you to Mike White, and he had angel wings.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
It looked like a funeral t-shirt. It's like, that's how they feel about Mike White? How do y'all feel about this guy? This is what you need. Like, you're going to take whatever we want you to take. They've got them.
Yeah. 100%. Yes. Yes. And you are so desperate.
In a weird way, it's Aaron's final gift to Green Bay. Like he's excoriating them and talking about how all the reasons he's not mad, which confirmed that he is mad and doing all of these other things. But he's given them an incredible gift in this moment. So you're welcome.
Yeah, we'll see how long that takes to play out. And then, you know, I do want to talk about what the future of the Packers looks like with Love, who we got, you know, a glimpse of, actually, for the first time, really. Not the first time, but a full glimpse of last year. But that's the state of play right now. Aaron Rodgers is more likely than not going to be a New York Jet. He is repeating history in many ways. That is incredibly fascinating. This is one of the more interesting chapters in modern NFL history. One chapter closes, another chapter begins. I did, by the way, while we're talking about Twitter, I think it was you who tweeted this. Everybody keeps talking about the New York media as though, like, literally everyone on Earth isn't constantly tweeting jokes and comments about Aaron Rodgers all the time.
I'm still trying to figure this thing out. Like, we're going to be in
New York media,
like, year 15 of my career, and it's like, yeah, it's different. It's the New York media. It's because the pH of the water, I guess, is like the pizza and the bagels or something. I don't know. Maybe
Mike Francesca, man, that's going to really. You thought Aaron Rodgers was getting it hard before. Once he gets
now, people are going to pay attention to Aaron Rodgers. I don't get it. I've never gotten it.
We're going
to
actually talk about him now. Oh my God, I'm going to have to talk about him so much this year. Okay. Before we get to the teams, I do want to talk about like some of the other big news that broke today. A couple quarterbacks landed with new homes. Pretty interesting, I think. We saw the Baker Mayfield contracts cheap. So we'll start there. Baker Mayfield goes to the Bucks. Jacoby Brissett, who was also linked to the Bucks, goes to Washington. Which of these do you like more?
Well, if you were fortunate enough to watch every single game and watch Jacoby Brissett before he was wrongfully put on the bench versus watching Baker Mayfield, I think it's a pretty simple answer here. This was last year was full on maximum Jacoby, and I wanted more. I wanted, because there was a discussion about, oh, well, you know, the 49ers need a quarterback. They should go get Baker Mayfield. I'm like, free Jacoby. Like, let's get Jacoby somewhere where we can get him in an offense. And so, like, yeah, it's the numbers are weird to me. I feel like watching Darnold and Jameis signed for around four, like $5 million. I felt like Baker would be there. Eight seems like a lot to me, but I'm a little bit lower on Baker. I love Jacoby in Washington with Eric Bieniemy. And I feel like if I'm Sam Howell, it's like, whoa, wait a second. Like I thought this was what you guys wanted, but here comes this guy. He's a little too good to, you know, so.
This was one of my favorite things last year is how the Browns were better with Jacoby. The Browns fans, don't be mad at me. It's just true. We'll see what they know. They do know. The people on the team know. Maybe that'll change next year. I'm just talking about last year. It's just a statement of fact. And I will say, by the way, I was wrong. Jacoby was better than I thought he would be last year. I thought it was his best year as a pro. The defense let him down frequently in games. He is. He played like an above average starter, honestly. I think he finished like seventh in DVOA. I pulled it recently, but a lot of his stats were pretty good. You know, it wasn't perfect, obviously, but for Washington, I think Washington and Tampa are both kind of in interesting positions because they're teams that are like too good to tank, right. But also didn't have a clear path to a quarterback. Slightly different because Washington, I think. We actually discussed, we had Ron Rivera on our set while we were talking about this, which was pretty funny. But at the Combine, we were talking about them as being, if you were choosing a team picking in the, you know, teens, 20s, whatever, who might make a dramatic jump up to get a quarterback, they were a team that came to mind because they're actually not bad. Like, the roster is pretty solid. I really like the skill players. The defense really improved down the stretch. you know, made some changes on the offensive line. I think that's probably something that they'll target in the draft this year. But Rivera said, you know, we're giving Sam a chance, and I think that's fine. Like, Sam Howell was much better than where he was drafted. He was coming off of a really terrible situation in UNC his final year. I thought he looked decent in his outing at the end. But I also think, Patrick, if they actually let this be a true quarterback competition between him and Brissett, and that's always an open question, right now it is Jacoby's job.
Yeah, it would seem to be rather obvious. And so it gives Sam Howell a chance. I don't think either of these guys are going to fall apart because they had the quarterback last year where the idea was if everybody wasn't nice to him, that somehow he wouldn't be as good of a football player, which is weird to me. And we'll see. That's the big free agency move that I would like to see.
It'll be a fun thing.
It's still available if anybody
he who shall not be named
wants to go snag him. But
by the way, did you see Frank Reich at the combine? He looked amazing, and I was like, dude, a few months away from
you see the stress of the job and the lack of success, and then you just take a little time off. If you're Mike McCarthy,
he who shall not be named. Once he was away from him for months,
Mike McCarthy took time off and became a computer, and now he's going to be calling plays again. So it's everything works out. Just take a little time away from the game. I'm looking forward to some vacation myself. I'll come back a new guy. I'll be doing math and stuff.
The Bucks confuse me a little bit though. Because so they've brought a bunch of guys back. I actually wanted to talk about one of the signings later, but we can hit it now. Jamel Dean bringing back, reasonable contract, very good corner, although weirdly didn't play in their playoff game, and it was a little bit murky what was going on with that. And he had like an injury, but it was the injury. I don't know. So they bring him back. They bring in Lavonte David on a 1 year. They're acting like a team that still wants to compete, and their quarterback is Baker Mayfield versus Kyle Trask. So I don't know exactly what they're like. Washington, I'm like, okay, you're like, let's give the young guy a shot. Let's bring in a competent guy. If it doesn't work, we'll move on next year, whatever. Tampa, I don't really get. I don't really know what they're
a proposition goal is for you, Mina. They have a first round pick in 2023 and 2024. What say you that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers send Lamar an offer sheet that says 4 years, $180 million, and then maybe we feel different about you're shaking your head at me. No?
I mean, I've lost hope that any team is going to be rational about this. The team that I think should do it, we talked about this in Around the Horn today, is Indianapolis. Yes. But seems like the obvious one. But yeah, I mean, Tampa was in a tough spot. I guess I should acknowledge that because of all the decisions they made with Brady. They were super capped out. Like, you know, they were not picking high. So it was just a very challenging situation to be in vis-a-vis getting a quarterback.
I think, like, the pieces are still there. And you don't, like, if we're not signaling to other teams that Mike Evans is a piece that's available, if the Buccaneers truly are looking at this roster and saying, hey, we're looking at the Carr edition Saints, the new look Panthers with a rookie quarterback, you know, going in, the Falcons with Desmond Ridder. Maybe why not? We still have some pieces from the Super Bowl runs. I am a fan of. I don't want teams to cash in on an entire season. I don't think it helps the league. I don't think it helps me, like watching and covering all these games. I'm okay with trying everybody go full Saints. Like, why not? Like, what's the harm in that?
Well, let's take the quarterbacks out of it. The Bucks, like, pure... Sorry, I'm opening my text in case any news breaks. I just saw, I got a bunch. I just want to make sure we don't miss anything.
Yeah, I saw a few coming.
The Bucks roster is still good.
Yeah.
So I guess that's... And I guess their feeling is like, oh, maybe we can get the upside of Baker. Okay, Jeremy Fowler just tweeted, the Ravens have been involved in the free agent quarterback market, looking into options such as Baker Mayfield and Jacoby Brissett. They're looking for flexibility. I'm not going to engage with this. I'm opting out. Yeah, the roster's still good. So I guess their feeling is like, hey, maybe we can capture we can get the Baker swing back. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah.
Or they, you know, the folks in Tampa picked up on Baltimore's interest, and they got a nice trade piece for after this window closes.
Oh yeah, there you go. Connecting the dots. Yeah. We hear you like this Baker Mayfield guy.
So here he is.
You like him?
But like
at $8 million,
it's tough to To think of like the Bucks being there in the division, watching Baker go 1-5 for the Carolina Panthers, and like being like, "Yeah, this is the guy."
That's it. That's the thing, too. Yeah, he was so bad in Carolina. He had a couple good games with the Rams, but you know, I don't know, man. Tough situation, though. You know, again, it's a couple of big moves in the NFC East. I want to hit the Cowboys. I don't even think this is too much to talk about. This finally cut ties with Ezekiel Elliott, who had a $16.7 million cap hit this year. By cutting him, that's spread out. They will get $11 million in cap relief this year, post June 1st. Tony Pollard, they franchise tagged, brought him back. Feels like, you know, the end of an era, I guess. I don't know if this necessarily means that Jerry and Stephen Jones are actually going to make smart decisions going forward or anything like that, but this has kind of felt inevitable for a while in Dallas.
Yeah, this has been the albatross, especially through this period where you really had you had two solid years where they could really take a shot at things, and constantly being hamstrung by this. So we talked about Jacoby's season in Cleveland and how big of a part of that Amari Cooper was, and what could have been in Dallas. But ultimately, that's not Zeke's fault, because Dallas wound up with $20 million in cap space anyway. They could have kept Amari last year. That's also on the leadership as well. But it's been hamstringing them. Jerry clearly loves him. He said so in the statement today. And maybe he'll come back at a different number. But it does feel like something has ended.
This feels like the literal manifestation of the jealous girlfriend meme, where Jerry Jones is the guy, Ezekiel Elliott is his girlfriend, and Bijan Robinson is the girl in the red dress. I mean, I cannot see Bijan, who hometown running back, falling past Dallas. It just feels inevitable unless someone takes him first.
I like that. I like that a lot. It does. It would hurt. Because we've been waiting, especially those of us in the fantasy community, like, give me maximum Tony. And the idea that we would finally be close to that and not getting it is slightly frustrating. But I would
say, I know. It would be, I mean, they do need to draft a running back, you know, bring back Pollard off the injury on the tag. They do need depth. We can hit this here too, though. I did love, this is probably one of my favorite moves in free agency, the acquisition of Stephon Gilmore. Minimal, I forget, it was like a late round draft pick. He's on a super cheap deal this year. Perfect fit scheme-wise for a Dan Quinn defense that plays a ton of man coverage, uses a ton of disguise. Gilmore isn't, you know, peak New England Gilmore, but he is still a very, very good and very, very smart and very, very experienced press man corner. So it just seems like, especially for a team where the secondary, the lack of depth was such a problem for them down the stretch last year, this feels like a really smart.
You could make a case it was the problem, right? And so now you're capable. The ability to have that pass rush, I think it extends guys a little bit. And maybe that's why we're not seeing the market for Slay that we thought we might be seeing at 32 years old, considering that Philly was able to rush the passer like that as well a season ago. But I do love the move. It also makes me think back when, because we just finished talking about Zeke, how the Cowboys could have taken Jalen Ramsey in that draft, but instead took Zeke. And like, it's one of those butterfly effect type situations that I'm playing with in my head now.
Ramsey told me he would never be a Cowboy because he was so mad about that. And then his agent was like, please don't put that in the article. You might be a Cowboy at some point. I was like, we can talk about him actually in a second. Well, speaking of cornerbacks, another big move. Well, not big move, but a report that the Eagles going to part ways with Darius Slay. We were talking about this a little bit before. You mentioned that Slay could just come back. Yeah. They did give James Bradbury a three-year deal. Comes in cheaper than what they would pay Slay. This is a team, Super Bowl team that really did, I don't want to say they went all in last year, but they definitely had some cap issues. Guys have left in free agency. A ton of guys on defense have left. So cornerback remains a need. It's one that I expect them to draft. But to your point, it would also make sense for them to try to bring him back.
Yeah, it's especially considering that CJ GJ is out there as well. And we don't. It's a weird question. It makes me think back to the Eric Reed days. And it's like, for some reason, the safety market just like falls off, and it's like, well, what's happening here? But like, there were such good players in the secondary, again, for a team that was getting more pressures, like before Dallas came on towards the end of the season, like it wasn't even close. It was just the Eagles, like, and then that was it. I would like to see him back. I understand Slay coming off a huge year, watching, you know, the guy across from him get paid and saying, hey, I would like to see what the circumstances are. If nobody's really moving like that, I could see him back in Philly.
One more news today, piece that I do think is pretty big that I forgot to hit. Juju Smith-Schuster, 3-year, I think it was about $33 million-ish deal with the Patriots. Basically, cost the same as Jacoby Myers. So this is kind of interesting. Exactly, wow. Okay. Both, I think, reasonable contracts. We're going to talk about Vegas in a second. This is interesting because basically what it means that New England was like, yeah, we think you're better than Jacoby, right? Because when you have these salaries, it's like, okay, same deal. Do you think he's better than Jacoby? I guess I'll start there, or better for New England, which might be more.
I think he's better for what New England is asking him to do, considering
cultural fit. Great cultural fit.
Sorry, just kidding. The Patriot way. He's gonna delete his accounts, and he's gonna be like, "I am business."
Bill Belichick's, you know, doing. I don't even know what a TikTok dance is.
That's one of my favorite bits. Like,
sorry to the video
Bill
audience.
Bill Belichick
to watch
knows
that.
What TikTok is. Like, I think, like, Bill wants to be like, I'm so detached from the world.
Fake tech Luddite, like, Bill Belichick.
No. He's got an account. He scrolls mindlessly like all of us. He probably spends 6 hours a night on it. And that's the reason for the Patriots' recent collapse. But
your TikTok's great.
Oh, well, thank you. Yours is as well.
One of my favorite TikToks. Right. I'm trying to get up.
But it's like, I think that's the quintessential, like, that's the clearest example, like, none of this stuff actually matters. Like, Bill doesn't care. He sees a large wide receiver, a solid blocker off the edge, a guy who knows where he's going to be, good feet. He's not what we thought he was when AB was nuking the planet. But he's still a serviceable football player who has a ring now. Like, it's not a problem. But I do think, like, for me personally, I think Jacoby is a better separator. And that's what I would value. Clearly, the Patriots don't necessarily value that, so...
I think that's a great point, because I guess that's why, you know, my question was, I actually feel like it's kind of those BS questions where the answer is it depends. Mm-hmm. If you're comparing these players, they have, in some ways they fill a similar role in the offense, but they have different strengths. I do think Jacoby is a better separator. Juju is tougher, contested catch guy. He can block. He can do something that Jacoby was not super great at, which is get more yards after the catch. I think that's something New England really wanted from the position. Wants, we know they want that from the slot role. It's literally been the signature of that role. And I think that was always the thing with Jacoby. It was like, he is a great number two or three, depending on how good your receiver core is, who was forced to kind of be the number one in that offense. And it was never the right, exact right fit for what New England wants to do. Now he goes to Vegas, who I actually want to start off by talking about. So Juju, it makes a ton of sense. I do think, however, their work at wide receiver cannot be done here. They still need a true X receiver in this.
And there's no way to really look at the 2022 Patriots, who at a certain point in the season had attempted 10 passes in the end zone and only completed one of them. And that was late in the season. Like, there were so many offensive problems under the Matt Patricia version of the Patriots offense, where Mac Jones is beside himself on the sideline the whole time. It really is tough to evaluate, also tough to watch. But I don't know that we got anything from that. And maybe that's why Jacoby Myers is looking to get into another version of the similar offense, to kind of show the league, like, hey, I'm capable of doing this. If given the opportunity.
Speaking of the Patriot way and Jacoby, let's talk about the Raiders. Let's talk about both sides of the Darren Waller trade, which is a huge trade, but wasn't a huge trade. It ended up being only for a third rounder, which, you know, reflects two things. I think, one, the fact that Darren Waller has battled injuries now for the last couple of seasons. And two, the fact that he seems to absolutely hate Josh McDaniels.
So does his wife.
Oh my God. Yes, that gave me an excuse to repost a clip that I will never not post when given the chance, which is Kelsey Plum throwing the t-shirt into like the upper deck of an arena. Every time I watch that, I am startled anew. Like you watch and you're like, wow, her throwing motion is really great. Wow, that thing is going. It's still going. It is still going. Oh my God. And of course, immediately triggers a round of, well, she's thrown farther than Derek Carr has ever thrown the ball. Yeah. Okay. So the Raiders side of it, the Raiders have been very active in free agency. They did sign Jacoby Myers. I guess I just start by saying they signed Jimmy Garoppolo. 3-year, $67.5 million contract, 34 guaranteed. So it's not prohibitive for them to get out of it or to draft a quarterback either this year or next year, although they're picking 7. And Schefter said on our show, they tried to move up and the Panthers beat them, which
they beat everybody. So
sure. Yeah. And then I like they signed Marcus Epps, a safety out of Philadelphia. It's been a huge issue for them, obviously, with Abram and can play next to Merrick. But I want to talk about the offense because it really feels like, okay, these moves together, bringing in Jimmy, bringing in Jacoby, sending away Darren Waller, Josh McDaniels like has a vision for this offense that he did not, clearly, production-wise, get to fulfill last year. Do you think these moves as a collective make sense?
They make sense looking in from the standpoint of Josh McDaniels perpetually, even though he says, I'm not Bill, I'll never be Bill, like trying to recreate the Patriots. It's like...
Oh, yeah, also brought back Jakob Johnson.
So, like,
yeah.
At some point, you have to go outside of your comfort zone a little bit and find some new blood to work in. To fill in some lapses. So it makes sense from that standpoint. I know Waller had been hurt, but the Giants are perfectly fine. I think plenty of teams are and the rest of the AFC West is going to be fine with Darren Waller not in Las Vegas as well. It seems weird that they sign into an extension and then like immediately there's discussion about him being a trade piece and there's the combine and the wedding situation and Kelsey is taking shots and it's...
We should tell people what happened. I guess apparently Josh McDaniels like leaked the news inadvertently that he was getting married to Kelsey Plum and then there was supposed to be a secret. I will say, Josh McDaniels, I don't think knew that it was a secret. I do think, however, because he has a lot of enemies, he doesn't get the benefit of the doubt and like there's, you know, whatever. Clearly, like some players don't like him, but I can't imagine he was like, oh, I'm going to him by leaking the news of his wedding.
This will show him. Come by. It's just, but it, like these circumstances seem to keep happening, right?
Yeah.
And I ultimately, the Raiders are going to be an improved team because I think like the collective shared vision of everybody in Las Vegas, hopefully Devontae included, is going to work out. Everybody that's there is going to want to be there, and the team is going to want those people there. But from the outside looking in, it's kind of hard to grasp what the actual plan is when they continue to make plans with certain players. Like the Carr extension wasn't that long ago either. And then everything suddenly changes. Like at some point the mirror appears and you have to look at what's in there.
It's tricky because I think you look at a division where you're with Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes. I don't know why I started with Herbert over Mahomes, by the way. And
people are writing right now.
I mean, a cause things. some Dolphins blogger. And it's like, no, you know, it's Jimmy Garoppolo. We're not gonna compete with them. And I think that's true. But I also think probably the goal here isn't to be better than those teams. It's to be competent next year as you continue to pursue the quarterback who gives you that upside. And I will say this. I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is better than Derek Carr in a vacuum. But I think he will be better at executing the Josh McDaniels offense than Derek Carr. Jimmy Garoppolo is, and this is why Kyle Shanahan loved him so much, a guy who is perfectly content to sit in a mech suit and operate it and pull the levers. And that is what I think both of those coaches want. I am very curious, however, to see how all these wide receivers fit together. Because, so actually, you know, obviously Adams is number one, and then you've got Jacoby, and then you have Hunter Renfro, and they could be on the field at the same time. But is that the optimal use of this offense? I don't know. I think there's going to be probably trade rumors with Renfro because of it, which is wild considering that a year ago we were talking about the big three of Adams, Renfro, and Waller.
Yeah, and of course, like the comparison is pointless, but because it's me, I'll make it. Like, we saw Tyreek going to Miami, and it's like, aha, all slots, but then, like, they set the world on fire. But Jalen Waddle and Tyreek are very, they're both unique, and together they're even more so unique. I don't know necessarily we can do that with Hunter Renfro and Jakobi Meyers.
I think you just did the ultimate great value comparison there. But
no
disrespect. No,
zero disrespect. Shop at like Walmart Myers all the time. I have several great value products, including the great value flaxseed that I put in my cereal. But it's if that's the vision for both of them, I don't see why. Like Greg Rosenthal said yesterday on the show, it's like Josh McDaniels wants to have all slots on his. So maybe there's a trade for
the all slot offense.
Maybe there's a Devontae trade, and we're going to get another slot to come in there. I think we could just conceptualize these things, but until they make some more moves, I feel like they can't be done. And maybe, as you said, that's it for Renfro, and it'll be whatever former Patriot, former Texan, former Belichick tree guy you want to put in there.
It feels like, given the wide receiver market, a team that could have traded Adams something crazy. But then that would have to entail like saying, all right, we're not going to be good. That's not what they're doing. On the other side of it, I absolutely love the Giants going out and getting Darren Waller. The Giants needed guys who can catch the football, and that does not have to be. I mean, Darren Waller is basically—he's kind of a wide receiver, anyways. Obviously, you know, it's kind of like I talked about this with the Bears and DJ Moore because it's so rough out there. There's so few good options. I actually think the idea of like New York saying our best option is a tight end who's making less than top end receivers would make, even, you know, second tier. I think Darren Waller's barely making more than like Jakobi Meyers. I think that's really, really smart. This is a New York offense that was good with tight ends on the field last year. I actually really like Daniel Bellinger. It's an offense that didn't really push the ball downfield that much last year, but having a guy who's like truly dynamic in Waller, I think, is a home run for them at a cost that I was pretty surprised by. I thought it was
especially considering the time that they were able to make the trade before the league year had even begun, and so you're able to go get a guy who, again, there had been the injuries there. As this phone falls off of this desk, apologies for that. I'm in one of these pods, and now it's talking to me. Anyway, they make this move at a time where the wide receiver market. Clearly, you're going to have to wait. You're going to have to make some offers, be aggressive with some guys. And so you just fulfill that pass catcher need. Like who cares what he's listed at? Because, Hodgins comes on late. Bellinger had the scary eye injury, and you really saw the offense kind of fall off when he was not there. And so they add not just talent, but depth at the position. You kind of get the feeling they're going to have a similar offensive idea where it's like, really heavy on Saquon. Hopefully Saquon gets paid considering how much this offense he's going to carry. But it's you see the vision, and at least unlike especially the team that we just talked about, there's a cohesive idea for what they want to do on offense, which is something that's great for us to look at.
Yeah, it just seems like, let's make a better version of last year.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Last year we improved a lot. You know, makes sense. All right, let's take a quick break and then start off by talking about a team that's been extremely active thus far, the Chicago Bears.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, Get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Building the perfect same game parlay can be time consuming, but with Quick Picks, the Caesars Sportsbook app does the work for you. Quick Picks are pre-built same game parlays that turn today's biggest headlines, storylines, and games into bets. They're quick and easy to use, and you can't miss them. They're right on the home screen of your Caesars Sportsbook app. Give them a try, and if you haven't downloaded the app yet, register using code OMAHAFULL and then place your first bet. If you win, congrats. If you don't, you'll get your stake up to $1,250 back as a bet credit. If you have a gambling problem, in Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed to Horseshoe, Bossier, City, and Harris, New Orleans. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, which is 1-800-426-2537, or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY 467-369.
Did I talk about the Bears trade on this podcast? Oh, no, this is when I was on vacation. Anyways, I love it. I mean, there'll be plenty of time to talk about that. I loved it because they got DJ Moore. You know, we talked about the lack of wide receivers. But the Bears still, even after, you know, they had a ton of cap space, which I think impacted their approach to, well, I know it impacted because they spent a lot of money, but you have to spend a lot of money when you have a lot of space. And they did. And they spent a lot of money early. And they did in ways that I have somewhat mixed feelings about. Yeah, I do. So there's some, you know, signings on the margins. You bring in Nate Davis, guard from Tennessee, interior offensive line, big issue. DeMarcus Walker, pass rusher from the Titans, inside out versatility. I actually really liked that signing. Wasn't a lot of money. But the big marquee signing, it was a pair of signings. They went out and they signed two linebackers, T.J. Edwards and Tremaine Edmonds. It's very interesting, and I've been thinking about this a lot over the last couple of days. So Edmonds is one of the splashiest signings in free agency thus far. 4 years, $72 million, 50 fully guaranteed, which I believe is more than Roquan got from Baltimore, though Roquan got more total money. But naturally, because the Bears traded Roquan, it's hard to not look at these signings and kind of compare them. And it's tricky, Patrick, because it's not a direct comparison. You're not comparing Tremaine Edmonds to Roquan. You're saying they got a couple of players. They got the draft picks out of it. I think that's the one they used for Claypool. I can't remember. but Roquan Smith is a better player. So yes. In my estimation... So how do you feel about the Bears going out and getting these, spending so much money on two linebackers?
I think maybe it's acknowledging, right, that sunk cost is a logical fallacy. There's nothing that we can do to go back and remaneuver the Claypool trade or even the circumstances surrounding the Roquan's departure and that trade. It's they have a positional need. They went about addressing it. And perhaps I'm making excuses for the Chicago Bears here, but it would be worse to go super cheap at linebacker considering what happened towards the end of last season after the Roquan trade, and as if to say like, this is it. We're not even going to have linebackers on the field. We're just going to throw some extra safeties out there. We're going to line up with six defensive linemen. So I think that would be worse. I see what you're saying in terms of comparing the players and the deal. And it's like, maybe we're getting mixed messages here as far as what the team wants to do on defense. And it also might've just been about the particular relationships with Roquan.
I think that is also,
maybe that's ultimately
it has to
what
be acknowledged. There was some bad, I don't know, bad blood might be misstating it, but it did feel like that relationship had come to an end.
Yeah.
Ollie Connolly, who's sometimes on this podcast, has a great Substack called The Read Optional, wrote about these two players And I thought he made some really interesting points about the fit in Eberflus's defense. You know, Roquan, his great strength, you really saw on display in Baltimore, is his versatility.
Right.
The fact that on one down, he can, you know, rush the passer or simulate a pressure. On the next, he can play tight man coverage up the seam. Like, he is all over the field. Whereas Eberflus, Ollie wrote about this, really wanted like a tall, athletic, long linebacker to play a lot of zone. Mm-hmm. And Tremaine Edmonds fits that bill and is coming off of course, his best season as a pro. You can view that as, I think, in two ways. You can say, well, he was like kind of up and down for 3 years and then was like awesome last year and now you're making him the highest paid linebacker. Or you can say this is a guy who came into the league, his first round draft pick, as, you know, all potential, and he's only, I think, 24 or something.
Yeah, just 24 now. Because he was like 19 for
so Dallas, yeah, right. So Chicago is clearly saying, we think he's an ascendant player. We want to grow with him. He got so much better in coverage last year. We're going to pair him, by the way, with TJ Edwards, who's super solid for Philadelphia. So I guess I want to say I didn't hate it. I was just like, it's a little bit of a risk here, especially when you view it holistically. But they did have a lot of money to spend, which I think factored into it as well.
Yeah, it was the team needs that was the conversation was yes, just everywhere the entire roster, and so they get DeMarcus Walker in, who I think could be one of the sneaky moves. As far as we've seen thus far in free agency, and the ability to get DJ Moore in that trade just turned the trade opportunity into something else entirely. But the defense was a major issue. Skill was a major issues everywhere. So spend the money. Like, what
I am,
as long as you got talent on the roster, go for it. Just go do it. As far as I'm concerned,
generally very pleased with what the Bears have done. Like I said, I didn't really get a chance to talk about this trade, but, you know, as a show of confidence in Justin Fields, and perhaps more importantly, giving yourself a better chance to truly evaluate him, I was pretty appreciative of it. And I don't think their work is done yet. You know, I think I wouldn't be surprised if they use that pick 9 on like an offensive tackle. But there's still pieces to be added on that side of the ball. So I'm excited to see what they do. Another team I wanted to talk about is the Miami Dolphins, team that picked up to us with your option, speaking of votes of confidence, and then went out. I think I have absolutely loved what they have done this offseason thus far. The first move, really one of the first big moves generally, trading for Jalen Ramsey, a third round pick, and poor Hunter Long, who... He didn't ask for any of this.
No, he didn't.
But became a bit of a punchline. So we can talk about the other things they do, but I feel like we got to start there. Universally, people were like, that's it? And people say that knowing that Jalen Ramsey is not coming off of a great season by his standards. But for a player who still flash top-end play, still so disruptive, still so smart, to give up that little for him. Obviously, they had to pay him some money, and I think that's part of the reason why he's gone and why he ended up there. It feels like a pretty big coup for Vic Fangio, their new defensive coordinator.
And Mina, it's not that much more money. And in terms of the commitment, it's not there either. We're just playing through 2024, and so it's kind of the official signal, as it was for the Rams. Like, okay, yeah, this is it. We're going to try to win a Super Bowl. We're going to trade for Jalen Ramsey. And so now that you just transfer that to Miami in another spot, which we were waiting, we've been waiting for some time for the official designation to come of Jalen as a safety. And the Dolphins communications had S in there at some point.
Did it? I didn't see that.
I forget if it was an official like email or if it was in one of the tweets or graphics. And so it's like, okay, yeah, this is where Jalen is going to be. Because it's at a certain point, like, you can't be that big and move that way and play on the edge at all times. And Jalen had played everywhere on the field. Raheem had moved him around a whole lot.
Yes.
And so he's going to be valuable no matter what. And of course, he's going to take reps at corner. But this just, as you said, it gives Vic that flexibility to do almost anything with one of the better players in the NFL. And because we talk about him so much, like whenever like T. Higgins pushes him in the Super Bowl, people are like, oh, there's toast. This guy's getting burned. Like, yeah. That's not happening all the time,
he's
folks.
He's an easy target for that's really interesting. Yeah, the versatility, I think, is what makes him such a good fit for this defense, because Vic Fangio, you know, the things we know, you know, he is going to prioritize stopping the pass over stopping the run. You're going to need a light blob of light boxes. You're not going to blitz very much. And then on the back end, you know, I think he's been kind of become associated with those two high shells. But really, his defenses throw so many looks and so much disguise at you. And so having a player who's kind of like a chess piece in Ramsey, and like you said, we did see him use that way in LA, not last year, but during the Super Bowl run, they would constantly move him inside when they were playing man in the slot. We'll see about that, but I think it's going to be very matchup dependent, but it's just another piece for him. And then they go out and they sign David Long Jr., who I think is probably like NFL Twitter's favorite player because he's like one of those guys who everybody knows is good but isn't famous. And they signed him to a 2-year, $11 million deal, which I think reflects injury status, but still a very, very talented off-the-ball linebacker, Tennessee. They bring in their running backs, Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson, back on super reasonable contracts. And then they go out, and I think this is worth mentioning, they signed Mike White from the Jets, 2-year deal. I thought that was a really good signing. You know, this is a tenuous quarterback situation in Miami, given Tua's injury history. And White, I think, for an offense that uses a lot of play action, very timing-based, you know, he's not a creative quarterback, but I thought that was a really smart signing.
Yeah, we had, I think, 22 franchises that had to play their backup quarterbacks extensively. Like, it's a league-wide thing at this point, especially with the greater focus on how we manage brain injuries. Specifically because of the circumstances that Tua and the Dolphins went through. We're going to see these guys play. So why not bring New York's angel of Mike White in and just have him there just to get. But again, Tua's going to play all 17 games. Do not want to see him lying motionless on the ground ever again. And we're going to have a healthy Tua Tagovailoa and not have to worry. And Mike White is just going to have to live forever in the hearts and minds of Jets fans.
Can I force you into a hot take right now?
Let's go for it.
Break this out for social. Assuming, of course, that Aaron Rodgers becomes a New York Jet, how would you rank the AFC East at the moment?
I would go Aaron Rodgers, Jets, number one, over the resurgent Miami Dolphins. Yes, that's the reaction. It's on because the Jets were serviceable.
You're putting the Bills at three?
I am. I'm putting the Bills at three. The departures, Mina, it feels like it's like what's going on. I'm putting the Bills at three. I'm putting the Bills at three because you asked for a hot take, Mina Kimes. And
that
so this is as absolute searing as I can get.
Bills fans, I do not agree. Don't get mad. Or you can get mad at Patrick, at Patrick Claibon. I think it's just your name, right? In any case,
yes.
Wow. Well, I'm not going to.
Okay, so we're out of the hot take zone now. I mean, yeah, legitimately, it's hard to look past, like, as annoying as Aaron can be, he's a spectacular football player. And like towards the end of the season, the Bills just kind of fell off a little bit.
Oh,
they just did. And I like
Miami. It's going to be absolute chaos in that division. I'll say that. And I do find it's hard to rank the teams. So I'm gonna sit on my ranking.
No.
This is my podcast.
No, do it. Put the Bills at three, and we'll just make it AFC West from last year. And it's like, oh, all these teams.
I know.
Like, all these quarterbacks. And then the best team from the year before wins the Super Bowl.
But that makes the Broncos the Jets. Like, if the analogy holds. I don't know. I'm not turning on Buffalo the way you are. I do want to talk about this team because they were very, very active. We don't talk about them a lot, and I find their moves very interesting in aggregate. That is the Atlanta Falcons, a team who was very quick to tell us they're not interested, not even interested in picking up the phone and calling Lamar Jackson.
Boo.
Ridiculous. But, however, let's just cast that aside. So they went kind of crazy in free agency. They brought back a bunch of their guys. Lindstrom, who's amazing. Caleb McGarry, coming off his best year. Right tackle. They trade for Jonnu Smith. They bring in Taylor Heinicke. Okay. They spend a lot of money on David Onyemata and Jesse Bates. And they also bring in, from the Saints, Caden Ellis. I want to talk about it in aggregate first. Okay. And then we can talk about, you know, if this feels like a team that thinks they can compete now, which leads me to believe they must have some confidence in Desmond Ridder, because they have shown, you bring in Taylor Heinicke, whatever, but like, they have not been linked to any of the big free agent quarterbacks or trades or whatever. Ridder played, I thought, better as the year went on last season. Nobody was really watching the Falcons anymore. But like, do you think that's an incorrect interpretation of the fact that they were so active?
It's either that or it's the biggest smokescreen for sending an offer sheet to Lamar in the history of the world.
Keep trying to manifest it, man.
Yeah, I will. I will. I'm going to do it for every single team. You know that. And
this would be such a, I mean, it just made so much sense. That's why everybody thought the Falcons were the one.
But you saw the improvement as the season went on. We had the Kyle Pitts situation where he had the most uncatchable targets, I think, since we've been charting those that came from Marcus Mariota. Jonnu Smith and Arthur Smith have been reunited. That's something to believe in. It's like he was Arthur's Cordero before Cordero, and now they're back together and kind of see how much Jonnu still has left in the tank. I think, and again, it's always good when teams are trying. They take the circumstances that they have and they get as many resources to win in this particular season. And it's good to see, honestly, all the teams in the NFC South start to do that. And these moves indicate that because they are able to bring in Onyemata across the division. And, you know,
they paid him a lot.
Yeah. And they've been able to see him. And clearly, Terry Fontenot has been able to see what he's been able to do. And so, like, you get him and Grady in the middle. And there's some pieces that we can really start to feel good about the Falcons on both sides of the ball. For the 2023 Desmond Ridders, it just remains to be seen for the rest of us to kind of start believing in it.
Yeah, the defense has been the issue with this team really ever since the Super Bowl run. And that group kind of fell apart. And they've been able to, you know, they've picked up on some talent here and there, AJ Terrell. They draft a couple safeties. Clearly, they didn't feel like they were done at the position because they go out and sign Jesse Bates, who's the best safety available, to a pretty 4 years, $64 million. So it's about 16 per year. That's kind of near the top of the safety market, but not at the top. It feels reasonable for a player who's been good to great, was in Cincinnati on the tag last year, who's versatile. They have a new defensive coordinator, Ryan Nielsen, coming from the Saints. So we'll see if the defense looks different. But yeah, it's, I guess the thing I do like about this is, again, assuming that they're set on Ridder, bringing in Jonnu Smith, yeah, we can kind of laugh about like Arthur Smith just trying to recreate the Titans, but the man has a vision.
Yeah.
Like, he has such a distinct offense, and Jonnu, like, the Patriots never really figured out the right way to use him the way he was in Tennessee. Arthur's offense, using him as that move tight end, freeing up Kyle Pitts to basically be a wide receiver. Drake London, I mean, God, that's they are the get off the bus team. But yeah,
it's a basketball team.
You see the vision for the offense. So, you know, I guess, you know, it's just interesting, I guess. I like that they're trying. I like that they brought in some players that I think are good players. We'll see, as far as Ridder goes, how that actually plays out.
Still time to, how long does it take to make an offer sheet, right? You just
can
write.
Can you imagine Lamar Jackson in an Arthur Smith offense with Drake London, Jonnu Smith, and Kyle Pitts, and that run blocking offensive line? Yeah. And the backs, Patterson, Algier.
Just have guys, just go stand in different parts of the field. That the bar is very low for what I want, Mina.
So
I want receivers in patterns not running into each other, not crossing each other, not being on top of each other. That's it. That's all I want.
Literally would be like the Ravens offense, but better. You know what I mean? Like the in terms of like the skill players and so the offensive line was so good at run blocking last year. Now imagine Lamar Jackson's back there. They're the team where I'm just like, you're not even going to call.
It's a smokescreen, Mina. It's a smokescreen. I'm speaking it into existence.
I'd love to be wrong as a fan of football. Okay, let's wrap with this team. The Denver Broncos were also very active. Sean Payton goes out, brings in Mike McGlinchey on a huge contract. Ben Powers, an offensive line that was like one of the worst in the league last year, obviously had some injuries. They also bring in Chris Manhertz, who's basically de facto offensive lineman, also the best named blocking tight end in football. And then they give Zach Allen a big contract, 3 years, $48 million, which is interesting because they let Draymond Jones, who's kind of similar to Zach Allen, walk. So, you know, the Allen thing makes sense. You know, they need interior pass rush or whatever. But what do you make of them, like, going all in on their offensive line that way?
I think they're able to acknowledge, right, that there were it wasn't all just Russ. There were significant problems, not just in the way that the offense was constructed and how they went about installing the offense and the way that everything happened. That there were some personnel issues that they could address. Like right now, they go ahead and do that, and the Walton Pinner family is not hurting financially, nor will they ever. Probably thanks to our particular mode of production. And so they spend. And I expect them to not be done here. We could see some restructures and pushing out, and I'm interested to see where they go. But in terms of getting the best team on the field, they're also doing that in Denver. And I think, like, because especially what we hear from former players and people who work with Sean Payton, like, this may take some time. This may rub people the wrong way. But I think there's the beginnings here of a Broncos team that was clearly going to be better than the Broncos team that we thought was going to win the Super Bowl last year for some reason.
Yeah.
But
Football Outsiders dropped their adjusted games lost ranking, like, which is always worth looking at. It basically shows you which teams had the most impactful injuries last year. And the Broncos finished number one. And it kind of flew under the radar because I think LOL Russ and all the LOL Nathaniel Hackett and all that stuff. But, like, they were very injured on both sides of the football. So they're going to be, like, better probably by default, and also Peyton. I do think, you know, this is one of those moves in collective that do signal something, a philosophical approach, which is, this is an offense that's going to run the ball. Mike McGlinchey's one of the better run blocking right tackles in football, granted coming from San Francisco. I think that they want to, and they know they have to run the ball well for a Russell Wilson offense to work. You want it to look like, kind of hilariously, some of those earlier Seattle offenses, wide zone running game, play action, boot. I mean, you know, I think it's not really about, like, let's take the ball out of Russ's hands. It's more like, let's put him in better positions based on his skill set. Let's force defenses to respect the run and defend it so that those, you know, he still throws a really nice deep ball that's available to him. And I think, you know, Peyton's going to be very, very smart about trying to maximize his skill set.
And because of the LOL Russ situations, like, people are going to look at the screen game and act as though, like, Drew Brees didn't go to the Hall of Fame running screens for Sean Payton. It's like the laughter and the jokes are difficult to separate from the on-field things. But, like, there is a quarterback there that you can win games with. And I think that Sean Payton is going to have a better opportunity to do that than Nathaniel Hackett did.
Agree. All right. So we have some time to just go through some of the players, not teams, but some of the big player signings. Let's start with the Seahawks. So I kind of alluded to this. This was unusual for Seattle. Seattle, Patrick, you've been covering this league a long time. You know, they don't do stuff in free agency. Certainly on the first few days, they usually sit back and wait. Their fans go nuts. And then they sign like a guard for like $8 million that no one's heard of or something. So that's not what happened this year. They did sign the aforementioned Draymond Jones to a 3-year, $51 million contract. Again, by their standards, very large. What did you think about this signing for a Seahawks defense that struggled last year to both get pressure and stop the run?
I think it works perfectly. Especially like we just talked about the Broncos and the offer that goes to Zach Allen. It may have just been legitimate. It may have been that offer that they had for him, like going
back
over.
They're really close, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's just, you know, and of course, like the difference, people are like, what's the difference? Well, the difference is like, this is their money. And Draymond earned this money. But like you watched, especially like the 49ers games down the stretch, there was clearly something missing. And they have the ability to go out and address it short of what Philadelphia was able to get in the first round last year. It's like, it's hard to address that particular position in the draft. So you go out, you get a veteran, and you just make it work. Plug and play, get somebody in there that can stop the run.
It's interesting, too, Patrick, because, yeah, like, there aren't that many, like, young defensive tackles that kind of came into the league and, like, have dominated. But there are so many good veterans. I mean, there's the top end, which actually we'll talk about Javon Hargrave next. But when you start, like, going down the list, like, we just talked about Arizona letting Zach Allen walk, Denver letting Draymond Jones back, and we think both those players are really good. Like, almost all of the defensive tackles signed have been really good. As it feels like almost like a golden age for interior pass rusher in this league. Draymond Jones, like, all of our metrics love him, even the simpler ones, like pressures, tackles for loss, all of that. He finishes really high. But, like, there's so many good defensive tackles right now. It's really – it does feel like a position where you're well-suited to sign someone in free agency and have it work out.
And maybe it's one of those cyclical type things where guys are in college and they know rushing the passer is the way that you get on these radars. You drop weight. You run fast 40s.
Yeah.
But we're constantly finding teams – still in a position like the Detroit Lions towards the end of the last season, the Seattle Seahawks towards the last of the season, like, oh yeah, you still need to be able to do this particular thing. Of course, being able to rush the passer is one thing, but if there's something that you cannot do, if teams can legitimately run for 250 yards on you when they want to, you need to address that. And so thankfully, there's still a market for these guys. And go sign them. Go get one. They're out there, you know. They're available.
It feels, I think cyclical is right. And I think that also, by the way, explains like how this year there was like this weird run on linebackers in free agency. Yeah. But I do think, like, I actually had a lot of conversations at the combine with defensive coaches about this. They were like, dude, kids out of college cannot play linebacker in the NFL. Yeah. They will eventually, but because of the complexity of the position, because of the way they're playing in college versus the pros, it's really freaking hard. And that's how you get, I mean, we talked about the Bears and mentioned David Long, but like Bobby Okereke, Al Shaair signed a big deal, Quincy Williams signed a deal that suddenly like looks pretty reasonable. Like, these linebackers are getting paid this offseason. And I do think that reflects what you just sort of the nature of the position right now.
And there's a pretty good linebacker. I think he spent some time in Seattle. I don't know. A reunion. Let's get
it. You need a linebacker. They need a linebacker very desperately. Okay, well, I alluded to this, and I want to hit the signing quickly. Javon Hargrave. I mean, this was the first, like, whoa, signing of free agency. For a couple of reasons. One, the money, 4 years, $80 million. That's actual top of the market type money. And the other was the fact that the San Francisco 49ers signed the best pass rushing defensive tackle in the draft, which feels a little like
acknowledging a mistake.
That's so you went negative. I was gonna say like putting fudge on a volcano cake. I don't know. It's both, right? It is. You can very much connect this to them watching their defensive tackles get pushed around against the Philadelphia Eagles, who of course Jalen Hargrave is coming from, but it also is adding, it is very kind of funny and interesting that they went all in on a position group that is already a very, very strong one for them.
And that's a very, very strong one, but it's hard to not think back to DeForest Buckner and his departure and saying like, oh, you know,
yeah,
Javon Kinlaw's there. We'll go for the draft and replace. And it just, they didn't get what they were looking for there. And so to be able to see a player up close and personal in an NFC championship game where your quarterback's all melted, it's a deal you go make. But I do think, and again, the roster construction and the circumstances of the cap are different.
Yeah.
But I think they're thinking back and wishing they would have been able to keep DeForest at that time.
In some ways, it makes a lot of sense if you just really back away and you say, we have a coach who's so brilliant as an offensive play caller that whether it's Brock Purdy, whether it's Trey Lance, whether it's Sam Darnold, which is, he's going to start a game for them this year. You know, it's going to happen. We'll be fine. Like, imagine being so confident in your team that, like, you know, the quarterback is the position that we can save money on. And we can spend that money on the defensive line and get the best guy. Now, there's costs. They lost a fair amount of players. You know, Emmanuel Mosley walked. Menhu and Ebukam, but Chris Kocurek will turn whatever, I think, edge rusher they sign into the next great edge rusher.
Cleveland Farrell, a chance for a reclamation project as well.
Always. Yeah. It is just funny. I don't know. They're an interesting team, and the decision to double down there is interesting. And it is a product of the fact that they're not spending very much money at the quarterback position. But that's a decision. It's definitely an approach. That is,
Mina, unless, of course, they would like to send an offer sheet to Lamar Jackson here in the next couple of days.
I love all the pitches.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow, MinaShow, today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow.
Man, I don't know. Is anybody even going to call?
It's going to happen.
All right, let's wrap, as always,
trust and
believe. Five quick questions for our guest. Four from me, one from Lenny.
Okay.
Patrick, question number one. You've been joking about this all show, about teams that should put in an offer for Lamar Jackson. Let me just ask you this, as a fan of the man, his play, where would you like to see him play quarterback? Pick a team.
I would like to see Lamar in Atlanta, Georgia. This has been my desire for some time. I know it's the desire of plenty of Falcons fans that I know. That's why I'm holding on hope to the smokescreen theory. But it instantly gives Lamar the best receivers that he's played with. And there's still space for them to go get somebody else. But truly, just as a fan of the player, a fan of the person and the man that he is, I just want the best offer. Just somebody send the offer sheet. And then Baltimore can have a chance to match, and in which case I would scream into the timeline and to every microphone that I have, why didn't you just make this offer in the first place? But yeah, Atlanta would be the pick for me.
Question number two. I'm going to let you play Dream GM again. DeAndre Hopkins, potential trade candidate, talking about the lack of wide receivers, free agency, the draft. Where would you like to see DeAndre Hopkins play wide receiver?
I would like to see Nuke Hopkins where he would like to be, clearly, based on his offseason workouts and his social media postings, the Dallas Cowboys. You give Dak a chance to play with – he already has a great separator in CD, a guy who can plays after the catch. But to have Nuke, running the backside dig where it's like, oh, yeah, I've reached the end of this progression. DeAndre Hopkins is over there. It would be fun to see because – especially with the YOLO ball edition of Dak that we got last year, just give him a guy that can get. Yeah, that's what.
Well, I don't know if you heard, but Jerry Jones pointed out that when you pay your quarterback, you can't do much else.
Poor Jerry. We're gonna have to worry about his pockets. He'll be fine. Go trade for Nuke.
All right. Question number three. What's a TV show that you've enjoyed watching lately?
I have gotten into The Expanse.
I've heard about that. It's a science fiction show, right?
Yeah, just a little bit. Because the disastrous socio-political circumstances on the real world aren't dangerous enough for me. I've decided to add another fictional universe to my consumption.
It's been multiple seasons?
Yeah. And it's changed providers as well. But I think everything's on Amazon now. So check it out.
It's all on Amazon. My husband and I have an inside joke where whenever someone tells us a joke or a TV show, we're like, it's probably on Peacock. And for some reason, even though we subscribe to all of them, we're like, we can't subscribe to Peacock. We have to hold out on one of these, which is so stupid. Peacock's probably great. I don't know. But it's insulting how many, when you open your screen and you're like, oh, I'm paying more than I paid for cable now.
Something's got to give at a certain point.
Question four. This is, I skipped over this player, so now I'm going to use a chance because this was actually a very big signing. The Chiefs go out and get Juwan Taylor. This is actually one of the more surprising moves. 4 years, $80 million, letting Orlando Brown, who I think was on NFL Live today, walk. Was this smart? I guess the important context here is that they want him to play left tackle, and he has never played left tackle.
I don't get it. I guess it's a positional value thing, because so now between Wiley and Brown, you're telling me that they're both going to be gone? Like after playing the 2022 Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl and having zero sacks, it's confidence in your scheme, confidence in your quarterback. These guys have earned the right to make whatever decision they want. It's confusing to me because both of those guys were very good. I think they're going to be very good players for somebody else. But hey, congratulations to Juwan Taylor. But it's very confusing.
It's just very, very. It's odd that they've done this twice now. The difference being that Orlando Brown actually had some experience playing left tackle in college. Mm-hmm. Juwan Taylor has never been a left tackle.
It was the whole point of the trade for Orlando was just for the opportunity.
He wanted
to do so.
Prove, yeah.
And he has done it professionally for two teams that made it to the playoffs. So I don't know. I don't get it.
They do seem to prioritize offensive line over all else in Kansas City. That's what that Bucs Super Bowl will do to you. All right, as always, last question comes from Lenny. Okay. It's not really a question. He just wants you to repeat something after him.
Okay.
He sent this to me just now. Are you ready?
Okay. Yeah.
My name is Patrick Claibon.
My name is Patrick Claibon.
I work for the NFL Network.
I work for the NFL Network.
The Buffalo Bills are going to finish third in the AFC East this year.
The Buffalo Bills are going to finish third in the AFC East this year after Mina Kimes trapped me and told me to give her a hot take. And here we are.
You clearly believe it. Bills fans, at Patrick Claibon. Everyone else, it's good to be back.